Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the show that brings you different hosts on different episodes, so you never know what you're actually listening to. And sometimes we speak in Spanish, but not this time because I only know certain words in Spanish and we don't want to change this to an R rating. I'm Ryan Davis. That's Isaac Bennett. Carlos could not be here tonight, and Joel is still in the ether somewhere. So another week has passed in Cubs baseball, and Cubs have been pretty much just what we expected the last week or so. They've been playing pretty good baseball. They beat the Cincinnati Reds 2 out of 3, and now they've taken the first two from the Pittsburgh Pirates, including an excellent game tonight, a 1-0 victory that we will talk about extensively. So, Isaac, how are you?
Oh, you know, it's good to be back, buddy. How are you? It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on this. I'm sure you guys didn't miss me, but I missed you, so it's good to be back.
Well, yeah, there was an Addison Russell home run mixed in there that you weren't around for us to all roll our eyes while you talk about it. So if you wanted to give any thoughts on that now, you could.
I think you know what my thoughts were, but like you said, we're going to keep this to a PG-13 rating, so we'll stay there.
Did you see, this is going way off, but the avatar, I guess, that Addison Russell changed his Twitter account. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I did. I think they've
Randall
been doing
Sanders
the
did that.
Randall Sanders has been doing the Pokemon thing for a while now for the players, and Addison's a huge Pokemon collector, and which I thought this thing ended when I was in like fourth grade, which was a very long time ago. I didn't know anybody still collected Pokemon cards, but hey, you know what? He has a great, very valuable collection. So the fact that Randall Sanders' little game there got picked up by Addison is that's peak Cubs Twitter right there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. And I was never into Pokemon. I know, like, it came around just at that age right behind me. I think you're pretty close to me in age where it came in like right after.
No, much younger. I'm much younger than you.
Well, then see, kids were that were like 2 or 3 years younger than me were into it. So I'm gonna assume that you're pretty much my age. You're what, like? See, I'm 25. So you're what, like 24?
I'm 16.
Oh boy.
I'll tell you what, I went out and played the first game of softball, and I hadn't played in 2 years. I've had major shoulder problems, and I didn't play baseball in a couple years either. And running out into that left center field, I felt like I was 105 years old. I'm only 30. I turned 30 like two, 3 weeks ago, and I felt like I was 100 years old, and I was like, I'm gonna die out here.
See, I'm on the other side of it, that I spend my baseball hours either, you know, recording videos or watching or talking to 20, 21-year-olds, 18-year-olds. And yeah, that makes me feel like I'm about 105 years old. Because, man, it's hard to even relate to him because you're standing there asking him questions and it's just like, this dude made more money signing one contract than I will make in, you know, 30 years. And, you know,
he's can't even so hit a curveball.
Yeah, and he's so much younger than me, and I there's just no way to relate. Anyway, so getting into our specific Cubs talk, now that we've Star Wars'd a bit.
I was sitting here just going, what are we going to do?
Anyway, John Lackey, I wrote a piece for FanRag Sports this week that I thought you might be interested in. I took a look at Lackey and how, outside of one start this year, he's kind of struggled a little bit. And you know, we've talked to death either on this podcast or just in general about you know, the velocity being down for basically everybody in the rotation. First things first. The pitcher that John Lackey is, do you see the velocity dropping 1 or 2 miles an hour on the four seam and two seam fastball? Do you see that as a big problem for him?
Well, first of all, you know, I typed John Lackey into Google a few minutes ago, and the very first thing that popped up on top stories was a FanRag Sports article from Mr. Ryan Davis. So I think we should all give him a slow clap here. And we're in the presence of first listing Google I'm not sure if I should just quit the podcast or bow down or what, but you know, that's pretty impressive, my friend. Congratulations.
Yeah, Mr. Big Time here with his John Lackey stuff.
Look at that. I'm looking at the Lackey grin right now. You're in rare company here. So to answer your question, is the velocity drop a big deal? I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think he's old. I don't think he has that much margin for error. And what you pointed out probably correctly is that his outpitch slider isn't moving horizontally, laterally. So I think those are issues combined when you look at them, you know, cumulatively. There's some issues there, but look, the guy's 38 years old. I mean, how long could you expect him to do it? So I expect that Lackey will throw plenty of innings for this team. His ERA and FIP will be mid to high fours, just where it is now. And that's probably what they need him to be. So if he can do that, I think that's okay. I don't think he is the pitcher that he was last year. But I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'm kind of there as well. And you kind of spoiled what I was going to go to next, the movement on the slider that I noted in the article. His four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, pretty much the same kind of movement as he's had in the past. Same thing for his changeup, but the slider and the curveball actually not biting like they have in previous years. And I noted that normally he, let's see, looking here, 217 batting average and a 336 slugging on his slider with a home run every 42.9 at-bats for his career. And in 2017, it's 300 on the slider, 600 slugging percentage, and two home runs in 30 at-bats. So he's getting hit hard, and his home run rate is up. So all of that, I tend to believe that can change, and we're in a small sample here. But what you said on, you know, kind of mid-fours on the ERA and FIP, that's fine if Lackey's giving you innings and going out there every fifth day, because we're beyond the point where you have to rely on John Lackey in the postseason. That was what he was brought here for, was pitching playoff games, but he didn't pitch particularly well last year in the playoffs, and they still won the World Series essentially without him, except for, you know, going out and giving them four innings, you know, once a series.
Okay, so. Okay. So, but that's a curious statement there. You said we're beyond the point of needing John Lackey in the playoffs, but is that true? I mean, are you counting on Brett? Did you see Brett Anderson come off the mound and almost get his head taken off by Rizzo yesterday? And
yes.
Speaking of looking like 105 years old, my wife was like, that's a professional athlete.
Like, well, sort of. Yeah, more love to Randall Sanders for piecing together the sniper in the building.
I didn't see it. Was it great?
Oh yeah, it's Rizzo doing finger guns from the dugout, and Brett Anderson dropping like a fly. It's great.
Fantastic. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. If you want to find, if you aren't familiar with who we're talking about, Randall Sanders does all kinds of awesome GIFs and Photoshop. I think you can find him Randall J. Sanders on Twitter. But yeah, that basically what I'm saying is, you brought him in to be that guy in the postseason, regardless of what he does in the regular season. But he didn't pitch that well in the postseason last year. I want to say, you know, he lost the World Series game that he pitched for sure. I think they won the game that he pitched in the NLDS against the Giants. That was game four, but they were set to lose that game until the Cubs mounted a rally against the Giants bullpen in the ninth inning. So, you know, that's kind of a loss that you could hang on Lackey, given that the Cubs were looked dead in the water until the final inning. I think even if you are rolling into the playoffs with their top three of Hendricks and Arrieta and Lester, with Lackey as your number four, they did it last year, essentially. They could win again with Lackey as your number four if he's essentially giving you nothing. So,
okay, so you're not suggesting that he wouldn't be the fourth starter. You're simply saying they can they can do it with a very average or below average Lackey. Okay, yeah, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. I, you know, there's a pretty big part of me that thinks that there's a fourth starter coming, somebody else besides, you know, 105-year-old lefty and 104-year-old John Lackey. So I don't know. That'll be interesting. Yeah, that's a little bit of a segue. We'll save that for later, I guess.
Yeah, we'll move on to that one later. But as of right now, let's look in-house. Assuming that you wouldn't say Brett Anderson is a starter you're going to roll with in the playoffs, if you're going to oust John Lackey from that fourth starter spot in the playoffs, is there anybody in-house whether on the big league roster or in the minor leagues, that you see could be that number four starter in the postseason, you know, excluding any thoughts of Lackey being injured?
Well, two guys come to mind. I mean, the first one is you could talk about Mike Montgomery, but I do not want him in the starting rotation. I really think the bullpen needs Montgomery in there as a lefty and as a middle guy for the playoffs. So I don't want to see that happen. The two guys that come to mind for me are guys that are having some success right now. Alec Mills, for one. He's a control pitcher. He's in AAA. He's got a 3.27 ERA. Doesn't strike out many guys. He's only struck out 5.7 per nine so far, but he doesn't walk anybody anyway. So he's kind of a pauper's version of Kyle Hendricks. And the other one is Eddie Butler, and Eddie Butler hasn't allowed anything. I think he's only allowed one earned run so far. Four earned runs. He's got a 1.46 ERA. But the problem with Butler that I see is he's only striking out four per nine. Now, I haven't seen him pitch firsthand yet. I'm hoping to get a chance to go over to Iowa pretty soon here with you, maybe actually, and see Eddie Butler pitch. So that's a guy that I could really see stepping up, but it's hard for me to suggest that he's the guy when essentially he's just allowing a ton of contact and they're finding gloves. So I'll try and get a firsthand look at him at some point and then bring back some information for the podcast. But I guess keep an eye on Eddie Butler and Alec Mills for later in the season.
Yeah, those are the two that come to mind for me too, but I've had the same reservations about them as I'm more reluctant to look at their ERA and more of their results when I see that the strikeout totals are so low. But I mean, if there's any one team in Major League Baseball where you can get away with a low strikeout total, it's this Cubs team. It's just hard to see them, you know, leapfrogging John Lackey in the trust of Joe Maddon at any point this year. So I think we can put down a stamp with a pretty solid no on, barring some sort of disaster with Lackey's arm, that anybody in house is going to take him over in that spot.
Yeah, just real quick, do you see Butler being, or actually either of these guys, do you see either of them being long-term pieces for the rotation? Because you've got a ton of turnover next year. Lackey, Arrieta, likely gone. Brett Anderson, very possibly gone. Right. So do you see either of these guys being long-term pieces?
I think it's very possible. I think that's what they were required to be. But I'll tell a little story to emphasize why. Just because they were acquired to be long-term pieces doesn't mean they will. Adam Warren was acquired to be a long-term rotation piece. And half a season of Adam Warren and the Cubs decided, we'll throw him in on the Chapman trade. So they may see something this year with these guys that they decide they are not the players that are taking over for John Lackey and Jake Arrieta. And those are big shoes to fill anyway. So that's not to say that, you know, anyone thinks that they could just step right in next year and fill those shoes.
Can you refresh my memory who the other piece was in the Chapman trade? I've been gone a little while. I'm having trouble remembering.
What, the Gleyber Torres? That guy?
I'm just trying to show you my new and improved Joel side.
Oh, you've been to Montana with Joel. That's where you've been all these weeks.
Ah, I spent some time in Europe. You know, they have a different sort of culture there.
Yes, I am aware.
Anyway, I'm not sure where we're going with that, but
I guess what I'm saying, and this maybe transitions into that question that you got from a listener, is if they are going to acquire anybody. Do you want to read that question?
Yeah, it's a two-parter, and it's from Mitt Kelleher's fifth biggest fan, which I have no idea what that even means. But our listener like base is kind of, yeah, probably doesn't have any hair either. our listener base is an eclectic group. The first part of it is very deep, very deep. How worried are you about the starting rotation? So I'll just toss that out there to you. How worried are you about the starting rotation?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 2 thumbs up.
Okay, moving on. This is question B after question one, so I think you were probably right about your assertion. It talks a lot about marijuana for a while, and then it gets into the question, which is, will the Cubs trade for a starter? And if they do, who will they trade and who for? So What are your thoughts on that? I've got a couple of tidbits.
I think they will trade for a starter at some point. I don't know if it'll be midseason. I would lean towards saying it'll be in December or January next year, once they see how the free agent market shakes out. I'm starting to lean towards thinking that maybe they won't let Jake Arrieta walk away. I know it's not really their MO to pay a high price for pitching, but especially at the age, you know, Jake will be 32 next year. So I've been leaning hard on the fact that the Cubs will let him go, but I'm starting to lean the other way a little bit. If he has a really good year and it's not just, oh, he's making people swing again. If it's really if that velocity is down to 92 to 94, but he's commanding those pitches with his stuff and getting by and doing really well by doing that, I think you lose a little bit of the risk where, you know, you feel a lot better about Jake Arrieta going 92 to 94 with the fastball and having a good year than you do about 95 to 97 and wild and all over the place. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that we need to see whether this plays out or not, in my idea, whether they do actually attempt to re-sign him. But I don't know. What do you think? Do you see any kind of in-season trades that you think they could make?
I think it all depends on John Lackey. If Lackey is what he is right now or a little bit worse, then I definitely think they'll go try and bolster the rotation, especially as it becomes apparent that this team runs away with the division, which I certainly think they will. But I think that they will. I don't think that they'll trade Eloy Jimenez. I do think that Jamer Candelario is a ticking clock, which saddens me quite a bit because I think he's really coming into his own. It's a guy that I really like. I talked to him twice last year and very just candid. And he's the type of guy that really just seems to put his head down and work. And at one time, the scouting reports at third base were that he wasn't going to be able to play third base long term. I don't think that's accurate at all. I think he's an average third baseman. And I think he works very hard. He's a really humble guy from what I have seen. So I'd like to see Jamer Candelario stay in the organization. Ian Happ is the one that they, I think, you know, should trade. And I hope he keeps hitting. He's been a little bit cooler of late. But I had an idea brought up to me by Matthew Trueblood, my friend Matthew Trueblood. And he sent me a picture of Johnny Cueto in all of his dreadlocked glory. And said, hey, here's the face of the guy who's going to be a Cub by the end of the year. So that's an interesting thought because he's likely going to opt out. I believe he's got an opt out in his deal.
Right.
So he's a rental, and the Giants aren't looking great at the moment. So
Madison Bumgarner's out for probably at least 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Cubs brass is deeply in love with Johnny Cueto, probably because the Cubs have never been able to hit him. So I can see Johnny Cueto coming to the Cubs, and I can see Ian Happ being the centerpiece of it. My fear is that Happ and Candelario would have to go if it doesn't include Jimenez, and I would really bemoan seeing Jimenez go in another rental deal. That would just crush my soul. So Happ and Candelario, I have a feeling, will be packaged together for a guy like Cueto. You know, again, if we're going to trade two, if the Cubs are going to trade two fairly premium prospects, I would much prefer to see a controllable starter. But, right. You know, they doesn't seem to be the way that they're going. So, yes, I do think we will see a trade this year.
And say that I'm on kind of the opposite end. I would rather save those prospects and take my chances with basically Hendricks, Lester, Arrieta, ? In the postseason, then trade Happ and Candelario for a guy like Johnny Cueto or anybody else who is a rental.
Oh, don't hear me wrong. I don't want to see that kind of a trade at all. Right. Not at all. Yeah. I just think we will. I don't want to see a rental trade. I hate rental trades. So
yeah, and it's not just about the fact that it's a rental. It also factors in what I said earlier. I think with what you have right now with John Lackey, if this is who he is. This guy whose slider doesn't bite anymore, whose velocity is down a little bit, who's a mid-fours ERA kind of innings-eating guy, That's fine for me with the number four starter in the postseason, because I think, you know, Madden will throw out eight, maybe nine pitchers on the postseason roster. And, you know, he'll have Mike Montgomery ready to come in at the drop of a hat, and whoever else, maybe Brett Anderson in relief for a few innings. So,
well, but are you even saying you wouldn't want to see a trade with, say, centered around Happ, even if it was for a controllable starter?
That changes it. Yeah, no, I'm fine if it's centered around Happ and Candelario for a controllable starter. Okay. That's why I was saying, if you're talking about a rental, I would rather hold off and wait until the offseason and get a guy who at least give me a full year of control. I mean, if you're trading for 2 months of Johnny Cueto, that to me, when he's just bumping Lackey out and becoming your number four starter, that's not value. That doesn't move the needle enough for me on winning a World Series, because we saw them win a World Series last year with essentially nothing from Lackey. So do you have any more on this, or do you want to move on to talking about the Cubs' new power hitting outfielder that they acquired?
Albert Almora?
No, it's for the life of me, I hadn't seen this guy in their lineup last year. I hadn't noticed him, at least. This guy, Jason Hayward, he's hitting home runs like crazy. Have they had him for a while?
I don't know. He's a handsome son of a gun, though. I'm enjoying watching him play.
He's got a lovely beard.
What, beard? You sure that's what you're looking at?
So, Jason Hayward, if you look at StatCast, on exit velocity only, is hitting the ball on average harder than anybody else in the Cubs lineup right now. Can you believe that?
Well, yeah, I do, because it's passing the eye test. I mean, the home runs that he's hit have been shots. He has had other very solid contact. I saw that he's, I think, 16th or 17th, maybe 17th best in all of baseball ahead of guys like Mike Trout. So, you know, if you had told me on, say, March 25th, that on April 25th, Jason Hayward would be 17th in all of baseball in exit velocity, I might have taken off all my clothes and done a dance on my roof. So,
well, I'm not going to go back in time and tell you that then.
Don't lie. So I think it's a tremendously good sign. And frankly, I don't think it's a fluke. I mean, he looks like the guy that was the Jason Hayward of the 2015 St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs that the Cubs couldn't get out. So it's his mechanics look better. He's quicker to the ball. His swing is shorter. He stopped locking up his wrists. That's another thing Trueblood has been pointing out, is he's locking up his wrists. So everything about it just looks more natural and athletic. And I feel like that's the guy that, you know, had a 118 OPS plus coming into, you know, 2016. And frankly, his season numbers so far, it's too early to look at numbers, but his season numbers so far almost identically mirror his 2015 with the Cardinals. So you know what? Jason Hayward becomes an incredibly valuable asset if he's going to do what he's done so far.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is, you know, let's not diminish what he could be. If he's a, you know, 290 batting average, 350 on base, 440 slugging guy who hits you 15 home runs with his defense, he's 7+ wins in WAR. Something that you're talking about, you know, all, you know, it just by the measure of wins above replacement, probably your second best player on the team. So that's something.
Well, it's not nothing. I mean, I think that stat line probably with where he's at in his career is probably a 5-win player, and it's an all-star. So he would earn his contract there. You know, I think that this is setting up to be, and I loved the contract that they did with Jason Hayward. I loved the two opt-outs, and I'm definitely on an island with this, but it's going to set up at the end of his third year. Say he continues to do this the rest of this year and continues to do it next year as well. It's going to set up for one of the most interesting opt-out scenarios that I've ever seen, probably the most interesting. And it's something to monitor for people, because, you know, he's a year and a half from being able to opt out of this deal. And frankly, it would time out very well for the Cubs if he did, if he played about the way he is and then opted out and they didn't have to pay him anymore and they could go spend a bunch of money in the 2018-2019 free agent class. That's the ideal scenario for the Cubs, and it always has been, and that's why they included the opt-out. But it's going to be really, really fun to see if he actually does do that.
All right, we're going to split the difference on this, because in 2015, Hayward hit 293, 559 on base, 439 home runs, he was a 6-win player.
So, yeah, I'm just factoring a little bit of regression as in his defense is why I said that. Yeah. I don't necessarily know that it's there. I just figured at 27 or whatever, 28, he won't He won't maybe be as good as he was when he was 25.
Somewhere around 5 at the low end, a 6 or 7 at the high end, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's hard to get fully on board. I mean, it looks great. And the home run yesterday, I don't know if you saw the location on that pitch. It was basically outside corner and a fastball. And he hit it essentially to right center. I mean, he just got around on it faster than I've seen him do with any pitch since he signed with the Cubs. So it looks great, but it's hard to buy in completely yet. So I don't know. I guess it's just a sample size issue for me where I need to see it more before I really buy it.
I agree. I mean, you feel a little bit like a scorned lover, right? I think we saw 4-3 enough last year that we're hesitant to trust Hayward's bat right now. But what I like is that it's not just the results that we're able to see. It's everything from the start to the fall, to the bat in the zone, to the follow through, to the contact, you know, and then the result. It's all there. So, I'm buying it. I think that he's there. I think that he's back. Just one comment on his WARP, by the way, just to go back to this. Mm-hmm. In 2014, in his last year with Atlanta, he slugged .384, which is miserable. He had a 113 ISO, which is just awful for an outfielder. His WARP, 6.2. He had, according to Baseball Prospectus, his fielding runs above average was 27.7. That has to be one of the greatest in history from an outfielder, if not the 6.2 WARP for a guy that slugged .384. His OPS was like 720, and he had a 6.2 WARP. That is unbelievable. Sorry for the side note there, but I found that amazing.
No, I mean, that just explains this guy's value to the team. I think there are so many fans who look at the stat line and say, you know, the traditional stat line, and they'll say this guy's a bum because look at his line. But, you know, who else could be the worst hitter in Major League Baseball and still put up almost 2 wins? I mean, that's what he did last year. He was,
yeah. Well, I mean,
that's hard to imagine as an outfielder, especially a corner outfielder.
2 wins according to what? BP's got his WARP at 0.000
from last year. Well, yeah. Fangraphs had him at like 1.7, I think.
That's very generous because there's no way that guy was above average player last year. You know, here's a question for you on him. And this, you know, I sort of offhandedly discounted his defense a little bit this year as he ages, but I didn't even know this when I said that. 2014, his fielding runs above average was 27.7. 2015, mm-hmm. It was 18. So a precipitous drop, but still a phenomenal season. 2016, his fielding runs above average, 2.6.
I think we're going down a road where I'm going to say something about Baseball Prospectus stats on a Baseball Prospectus podcast that I probably shouldn't.
Oh, boy.
Because I think anybody with eyes knows that he was not slightly above average on defense last year.
Mm, yeah, I agree with that. That was pretty strange. I just saw that and thought, wow. To give that some perspective, through 18 games this year, so, you know, we're talking a ninth of a season, he's already got 2.1 fielding runs above average. So that tracks more with that 18 number.
Yeah, I mean, that's to say that he had some sort of outlier dip in 2016 on defense is absurd. And that's a lot of where you're the fact that Fangraphs has him at, you know, 1.7 or 1.8 WAR, and Baseball Prospectus had him at essentially zero. I think that's where, mm-hmm. where that comes from, is they're counting him as the worst hitter in the world and essentially a slightly above average fielder. Yeah, I can see why he'd be a zero WAR player, but I guess I should just clarify this as saying this isn't just BP with the defensive metrics, but defensive metrics on a year-to-year basis are extremely unreliable at this point, in my opinion. If you look at like the overall, like for a player's like whole career, you can get a better idea. But I just don't buy the metrics as being accurate on a year-to-year basis. You just see too many outliers like that where you see, you know, okay, so everybody knows Jason Hayward was an elite defensive player in the outfield last year, but the defensive metrics don't say it. But that doesn't mean that I buy what the different defensive metrics say.
I think I tend to agree with that overall. I would be very, very interested to actually do a deep dive research on that to see if maybe it did translate into the field, what he was going through at the plate, translated into the field more than we realized. I would guess that the answer is no, but now I'm kind of curious. So one last thing on Hayward before we move on. Last year, I think everyone knows that he basically didn't hit the ball hard all year. There were only a handful of times that he hit the ball hard, and he's hitting the ball hard this year. Last year, his BABIP was 266, which with for a guy that is left-handed, athletic, and fast, that is an unfathomably low BABIP. And you know what? I think he deserved it because it, you know, when you're trickling the ball to the second baseman, I'm channeling my inner Joel here. When you're trickling the ball to the second baseman, you're going to have a low BABIP. But this year, it has rebounded into a more average range of 315, which tracks with his, you know, left-handedness, his athleticism, and his exit velocity. So that's one of the reasons that I'm buying it is I'm liking the mechanics at least somewhat. And he's hitting the ball hard enough, his BABIP's going to rise back up and his stats with it. So I'm encouraged. I couldn't be any more encouraged. I'm actually blown away. And I think it's credit to Hayward for all the work that he put in this offseason.
Here's a good trivia question for you. According to hard hit percentage at Fangraphs, what do you think the difference in percentages is between 2016 to 2017 for hard hit percentage?
Help me out. What was it in 2016?
In 2016, it was 26.4%. So just give me the gap. How much more or less do you think it is?
Oh, man. First of all, I'm not buying that 26%. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that 26% because that's a reasonable number. It's not low. I would say it's slightly above average. So I'm not buying that from Fangraphs. So I guess we're going to rip every site tonight. I wouldn't think it was much higher than that. I would say maybe in the 27 range for this year, but I'm just not buying that it was anywhere near 26% last year. I mean, he didn't have a bat where he hit the ball hard every game last year.
Right. Yeah. It's actually 26.3% this year. So it's a 0.1% drop in hard hit percentage. Where the difference is between soft and medium contact. 27% soft contact last year, and it's 19.3, which is not a career low, but it's in his lowest seasons for soft percentage.
That's very low. That's really low. That's a good number.
Yeah. And his medium contact is 54.4, which would represent a career high for him. So
yeah, that's a high number.
If you group medium percentage and hard hit contact percentage together, I think you're seeing he's definitely hitting the ball average to above average much more, you know, essentially 80% of the time.
Well, I think that's key. I think that speaks to the mechanics of the swing because your mechanics have to be decent to make medium quality contact. And if you're not making soft contact and he struck out 11 times, which is a little bit higher than you want to see, but it's not egregious by any means. If you're not making soft contact, you're making medium and hard contact, then that means that your mechanics are doing something right. So I just look at the basis of what he's doing. I like his feet, I like his backside a lot better. And he's getting to the ball so much quicker. It's just like night and day with how quickly he's getting to the ball, and he's doing it without cutting himself off. So I'm encouraged.
You heard it here, folks. Isaac likes his backside a lot better this year.
Well, there's no surprise there. Duh.
We've got for run down the actual stats. I'm looking at his Fangraphs page. 15.1% K percentage, which is good. It's basically in line with what his career, what his last 3 years is. 5.5% on the walk percentage, but I think that's probably. And I saw Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation comment on this, and I agree with his theory that the book on Jason Hayward was pound the zone because he can't hit. So he's seeing a lot of strikes early on. And of course he's turning on them and hitting them hard. So I think that's a factor of just he's not going to walk a lot because they're throwing in the zone on him right now. When they start to adjust to Jason Hayward, they'll start throwing more pitches outside the zone, and that's where his, you know, career 10.5% walk percentage and good eye at the plate will hopefully come into play, and he won't start chasing.
Yeah, and his ISO, you know, this year is 162, which is pretty healthy. It's not super slugger, but it's healthy. Last year it was 094, which is like, you know, Mike Fontenot or something. But
don't disparage Mike Fontenot. I'm sure he was better than that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, 162 is above his career ISO number by 9,000. So I think you take that, or you definitely take that. There's no question you do. Like I said, I feel good.
I feel good too. Yeah, I'll buy it. Mike Fontenot, career ISO 137. So there you have it.
It's not that bad. That's better than I thought it would have been.
For a guy who's 5'2", that's that's pretty good.
Oh man, you know, Mike Fontenot is,
that dude had sneaky power.
Sneaky power. He is the reincarnate Mickey Morandini, I think. So,
oh, the dandy little glove man.
Yes, the dandy little glove man.
Oh my God, here's a stat for you. According to Fangraphs, in 2008, Mike Fontenot had 284 plate appearances for the Cubs. He had 9 home runs and had a 3.1 WAR.
Yeah, they were he and Therio for that year, they were good together. And you know, people bought it in. They liked that up the middle, the Riot and Fontenot, and it was kind of fun. And you know, that lasted about 6 minutes, and then we realized no, this is not fun. this is just the best of what we've had in a while.
Oh man. But he won a World Series with the Giants, I think, in 2010. Both of them did, didn't they?
I don't know about Therio. I think, didn't Therio win with the Cardinals?
I think he won with the Cardinals and with the Giants.
Oh, that makes my heart hurt. It really does. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're
going to have to look that up before we move on. Let's see who Ryan Therio was with. I thought he was with, maybe Therio was with the Giants after, in one of those odd years instead of even.
We can only hope. I'm sure he's a great guy.
Therio was on the 2012 Giants. He was on the 2011 Cardinals. So he won.
He won it with both.
With back-to-back years, and then was sent off into retirement.
Yeah, you know, sneaky value. You know, maybe we need to rethink Ryan Therio's career.
He was worth a cumulative -0.1 WAR in those two seasons for the Cardinals and Giants.
Sneaky value, grit, will to win.
Yeah, TWTW, baby. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about? In my haste to get a third person on the show to talk to us because Carlos couldn't be bothered, I tried to get my editor at FanRag Sports, Alex Smolikoff, who is a Red Sox guy, because the Cubs are going to be heading out to Boston to play the Red Sox this week. But unfortunately, Alex was very busy, and it was the very last minute on my part, so he wasn't able to join us. But do you have anything interesting to say about Cubs-Red Sox?
I think that's what I picked for the World Series. I'm pretty certain World Series preview. So I guess just talking about today's game, which I think you said we would talk extensively about, even though there was exactly 2 hits on the Cubs side and 1 unearned run. You know, they explode yesterday. Their offense looked extremely good, which is, I think, more indicative of who they are than what today was. Garrett Cole was really good. So, but the thing that's interesting about this Cubs team is it doesn't really feel like they found their groove. I think the starting pitching is having some natural regression from last year, which we all expected. And I'm still very encouraged because the Cubs have lost 1 series this year. They got swept by the Pirates in that awful series. Other than that, they've won every series. They have overcome deficits in many, many games. Their bullpen has started to look really good. I don't have much doubt that the starting rotation will round into form and still be pretty way above average. So I'm seeing things out of this team that make me think they could be extremely, extremely good. Maybe even better than we thought that they would be. So
you just Cubs reminded me.
What's that? What did I remind you of?
You reminded me of the battle royale we were going to have on the podcast. Oh, 2 men come in, 1 man leaves, 1 man will be unmasked and murdered in the ring. In the Cubs and Pirates game tonight, Garrett Cole and Kyle Hendricks both dealing, pitching very well. Murdering the Cubs lineup. 78 pitches through seven innings, I believe. One unearned run allowed, I want to say, in the very first or second inning. And the Cubs are leading 1-0. The Pirates end up with a runner at third in the bottom of the seventh and two outs. Clint Hurdle pinch hits for Garrett Cole to try and get that run home. Of course, he doesn't, and the Pirates lose 1-0. So really, leaving Garrett Cole in, we never would have known what would have happened. It's possible Garrett Cole gets a single and knocks that run in, and we just don't know. But the Cubs didn't score any other runs the rest of the game. So it's kind of a moot point, but I made a tweet, a bad tweet as it is, because Clint Hurdle made the move to pull Garrett Cole to try and get that run in, even though he was dealing and could have gone the full nine innings. I said that they need to bring the DH to the NL. You made a snarky looking emoji at me. Go ahead and give me your thoughts. What did you think of that situation?
I was playing softball during that move, but just looking at it back at it, did you say there was a runner on when they pulled him out?
Yeah, runner on third, the tying run on third with two outs.
Oh, absolutely. You take him out. There's no question you take him out there. The Garrett Cole does you right. Incrementally, how much better he is than the relievers that they have is very, very minimal, right. Especially when you can go, you know, reliever to reliever where you want in the eighth and ninth. You'd already gotten seven innings out of him of two hit ball. That's an easy pull to me. I can't think of any justification to take him out. So,
and that should be clear. I agree on all of that. My thought was, isn't this the obvious example of why, you know, versus the American League, you know, you can leave that starter in for all nine innings without worrying about it. It kind of sucks. I mean, sucks.
What sucks is the opposite. What sucks is not having to make the decision. See, Clint Hurdle had to go out there and he had to actually think about this. He had to think,
wouldn't you rather have your better players on the field though?
I would rather see the strategy of the game kept intact rather than
wrong.
Well, I mean, on one hand,
I'm trumping you right now.
You're making an argument that the better players would be on tech. You could actually argue that the Giants bullpen would be more effective at that stage of the game than Garrett Cole would be. So,
fake news.
You know, I think you lose so much strategy out of the game if you take the if you put the DH in. I don't think the games are even comparable. And I'll tell you this. If you manage both, if you manage with the DH and without, I don't even know why the American League has managers. It barely matters. All you do is you just look out there and wait until your pitcher gets tired and pull them out, run your best lineup out there every day, and that's that. That, to me, is boring. I love the chess match of baseball, and the day that they take the DH out of the National League will be a very sad day for the depth of the game of baseball. I think you lose a ton of depth when you do that.
I will agree that I like the National League style better on the whole.
Wait, what? What you're talking about Trump fake news over here, and then all of a sudden you're agreeing? What is this?
Just like Donald Trump, I am being completely unpredictable. And
we got Sean Spicer over here.
Fake news. I do like the National League game better. What I think is, this is the obvious scenario that really sucks. I mean, it doesn't happen all that often where you see a pitcher dominating in a 1-0 game and have to be pulled in the sixth or seventh inning. It doesn't happen that frequently. But I do hate when it happens. And I also hate that the two leagues are, the National League is essentially at a disadvantage. So
I agree there. I despise that they're different.
Yeah,
I know eventually
rules.
It's going to go that way, but yeah, as much as I hate that they're different, I'm not willing to sacrifice the DH sacrifice not having it to make them even. So,
yeah, we can agree to disagree on that.
I don't know if you agree or disagree now because you just told me you like National League better. See, you know what? I think I win this debate.
Just like the election, it doesn't matter whether you won or lost the debate.
We all lost.
Whether you have the correct opinion or the wrong opinion, or whether you're giving facts or fake news. All that matters is I win, baby.
Okay, just win, baby.
All right, well, that's all I have. I guess follow us on Twitter if you like, at BP Wrigleycast. You can send us emails at BP Wrigleycast at baseballperspectus.com. That's Isaac Bennett. I am Ryan Davis. You can find his work at Pookie Wrigleyville. I'm at Famerag Sports and 2080 Baseball. That is all I have for tonight.
Take care, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.